You ready to go back in time again?
Yes, I am. If you're talking about with the podcast, yeah, nothing else.
No, I don't have an actual time machine in my house.
I don't know with you, Martin. God knows sometimes. Go on then, yes.
Okay, well, we're going to do it again and go back in time and relive some of our best bits here on Nullpois.
Nullpois is shameful.
Nullpois is lack of respect for jurors.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Nullpois is no fun.
Yes, hello again, everybody. I'm Laura, that's Martin. This is Nullpois, the UK Eurovision fan podcast. We love Eurovision. We don't know everything about it, but we're trying to learn. And this is the second edition of our kind of special set of episodes where we've taken some of our best bits across last year, across 2021, the interviews, the great people that we spoke to across the year, and just stuck them all in an episode for you to really load up and get your feel of Eurovision goodness.
And what I'm going to do straight away is take you back to some of that initial reaction immediately after the Eurovision Song Contest in Rotterdam. And you remember just how kind of emotional that end was, because there'd been all of that voting and then Italy had just won. This was our immediate reaction after that dramatic Italy win in the grand final.
What a vote it was, Martin. I think it's
word.
Fair to say.
Oh,
what?
My
what
goodness.
Happened? Oof,
look, we've just finished watching the final of the Eurovision Song Contest.
I genuinely am stunned and shocked by what's happened in that show, because I think to be fair, we did kind of predict this. We did say this is finally a Eurovision that's too close to call. Normally it's maybe between two people, but we had said before this before the final it was maybe between five or so, and I think that showed in the voting. It was chaotic, it was erratic, and I think it was also a little bit harsh, don't you agree,
Martin?
Well,
there were some real moments where you could hear the audience gasping. Never in a million years did I think we would see a top three that looks like Italy, France and Switzerland.
Yes, and I remember that moment as well. It was very, very tense. Unfortunately, there wasn't such of a competition for the UK, was it? Martin, you were getting pretty emotional about the UK's last place.
I had my hands over my face. I just couldn't believe it. However, having said that, and here begins my rant. I apologise in advance.
Go for it.
I think the UK deserved Nullpois. I really do. I thought it was a poor performance. I thought every aspect of what we saw tonight was subpar. The song was borderline average. Mm. It was just about okay. It wasn't embarrassing as a song that we heard in amongst the others. The performance was weak. His voice was weak. The staging was weak.
Yeah.
It was it was really, really bad. James Newman looked like some sort of drug dealer who worked in a small suburb. He came on out of breath. He was out of tune.
He was out of breath, yeah.
And it was just weak. And if you compare it to any other act...
No, I guess it's
true.
Had
18-year-olds doing this. They had professionalism, poise, and able to hold themselves on that stage a million times better than he did. I'm so sorry, and I know that a lot of work will have gone into that from the UK side. And not to take anything away from James Newman, I'm sure he gave it his all. I'm sure he did. And I saw that the performance meant the world to him. But I'm sorry, it just wasn't there for me. And I'm a little disappointed, not because we got Nullpois, because I say we deserve it, that we don't seem to be able to produce anything better than that.
Mm. It's weird, isn't it? Because maybe we're just like a bit... It makes me check myself as a UK Eurovision fan, and it makes me think... Well, because I kept saying to people, I think about 23rd. I said to them, I thought Germany, Spain, and possibly something else like Moldova, potentially, because they were quite out of tune. I was thinking, I don't think we're going to do great, but I think Germany, Spain, something else were going to be below us. But then I was like, was I completely out of it? Like, both jury and the public have given nil pour. So am I just being a typical UK person, just arrogant, thinking that we deserve better than we got? I don't know. I just don't feel he deserved double nil pour. I think he deserved something. I felt I thought the song was positive. I don't know. Maybe I'm just...
I don't know. I think if you look at that performance on the night, regardless of who you are and who you represent and all that, It was the worst performance on the night.
Oh, goodness me, Martin. You really, I'm listening back to that, you really did go for it, didn't you? Bless
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I was genuinely angry, wasn't I? You could hear it. Yeah. I was properly cross about the whole thing. So that sort of sets the scene, really, for what you're about to hear now, because we wanted to get, of course, reaction from as many people as we could to what has happened and the Italy win, the UK getting the double nil pour and not having a very good time. So we thought we'd chat to William Lee Adams. He is a very person in the know, it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. He runs the website WeeWeeBlocks.
Yeah, and he was actually backstage in Rotterdam whilst everything was going on. So he is meeting all the entries, he was getting all the goss. So we wanted to know, how was he feeling? And when we caught up with him just a couple of days after the grand final.
This Eurovision was a Eurovision like no other.
What was going on backstage when it got so tense at the end?
Yeah, and I think we should allude to, you had this great reaction video that we'll just play a little clip of now, when you were just reacting backstage to getting those four nil pour. Let's hear a clip of that.
Oh, man.
And the United Kingdom gets...
Girl, you're shaking.
From the public...
Oh, my God.
Zero...
God. Oh, what?
Zero jury?
Zero
telephone.
That's some Bar Raffaele cruelty right there.
Wow.
Zero. That, I'm sorry, that deserves more than zero. Go, Jen!
So tell us, what was that like?
We literally thought it was a technical glitch. Because four zeros in a row, I could not believe it. Then, as we got towards the favorites, like Ukraine in the televote, Switzerland, France, Italy, then we started to understand, okay, the favorites took all the points. It was intense. It was so emotional as well.
Yeah.
Because it always is when you've been there for 2 weeks and you see who's finally come out on top and all the work people have put in. But this year in particular, the tension around the pandemic, when artists started testing positive, there was a real mood change. And so to go through all of that, and then have a winner, any winner. It was just a moment of euphoria. And we were going up, 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 up.
But yeah, I can totally... we were saying this on the podcast as well, just how happy we were. It actually happened. There was actually Eurovision. Because you're right, especially with the sort of Polish delegation, Iceland, of course, it was touch and go, I think.
Let's move away from the COVID stuff, because we could talk for ages about that. Let's talk more about Eurovision itself. We've got to talk, especially for Laura and I, about the UK's... performance.
Yeah. Was there a feeling it was going to do as badly as it did before those points were announced? Or was it still a shock? Because I think afterwards, I think straight after, both Martin and I were a little bit shocked. And then, like you say, like a day after, we were like, well, actually, it makes sense. I can understand why. But when the performance came out, did everyone think, well, that's definitely going to be bottom? Or what was the feeling around everyone?
So there was a definite progression. So after his first rehearsals, there wasn't this overwhelming negativity. People were like, okay, they can work with this. They can improve on this. Then when I got in the arena for the grand final itself, the energy in the audience, it changed in the wrong direction. People were quiet. People weren't clapping. People didn't have that joyous feeling that they had for the acts that came before. And that's when I started to get really worried. I was like, uh-oh. Oh, my optimism for the UK started to kind of diminish at that point. And then when the result came in, I didn't think this was coming last. I thought Germany or Spain were going to be last. And I thought the UK maybe slightly higher. No. I mean, I didn't think we were going to win. But I thought, it could go up a little, maybe like 16, 17, I was hoping. And then when that result came in, I must say I was a little shocked at the time. But then afterwards, rewatching and considering the audience's reaction in the live arena, because that live audience reaction, I can tell you, it ended up being a very good indicator. Because when Måneskin was on, it was electric in there. When Barbara Pravi was on, it was this overwhelming sense of, wow, same with Switzerland. In the UK, it was the exact opposite. So it was a journey. And looking back, I think, I don't know, I just felt like even though they had people all over the stage, and even though they had big trumpets, the stage didn't seem filled.
What can they take from this? Because obviously, you know, straight after it happens, there's always this thing of, oh, they should pull out, they should, you know, all this kind of stuff. And we'll obviously be reflecting on this for a while. But what can they take from this to sort of improve?
Oh, it's so hard. James is a lovely, lovely, lovely person. He was so kind and warm and down to earth. I'm almost like wary of saying anything negative. But I will say that rewatching it, he didn't necessarily look that comfortable on the stage. He's definitely an excellent singer-songwriter, but I don't know if that always translates to performing. I don't know. Maybe his light shines brightest in more intimate gigs, yeah, as opposed to a gig like this. I think you've got to test artists on a big stage before you send them to Eurovision. Certain artists need to be framed more intimately and other artists need to be framed more widely, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think this performance, it didn't feel like it filled the stage. And I don't know if that's down to staging or down to him. But I think if they had made everything more intimate, maybe this would have worked better. It's a mystery to me, but I do know that these large trumpets did not resonate with Europe.
I like what you did there. It's very good.
He was very positive as a person. And it's you know, when they got the announcement, you know, him standing up and everyone cheering for him, that was a good reaction. He could have just been like, oh, and like looked depressed. But at least he sort of took the moment and went with it rather than, you know, he sent out a positive message.
You know what's funny? I thought the same thing. And then I was on the Eurostar coming back and another group, they were saying, oh, it was so rude how he threw his beer everywhere like he was drunk at a pub. Because I didn't take that when I was watching it. I took it as you did, like a positive, uplifting moment, like it's okay. But yeah, people view the same situation differently.
Us Brits are just used to us, you know, throwing beer in the air. That's as a celebration.
Let's look at your personal experience of this, William, just to end here, because you have done what not very many people have been able to do this time round. You actually got to go to Eurovision and you got to go backstage. So give us the standout moment that you're going to take away from Eurovision this year.
The Netherlands inside the arena, when Jean-Gu performed, the energy changed like I have never felt. The Netherlands had been waiting for 2 years to host this event. The home singer was there. And even if the song, you know, didn't resonate with as many people as he would have hoped, and it did poorly on the scoreboard, it had the biggest energy shift. It was magical. It was like there was a volcano erupting. The people, you know, giving him energy back and him giving back that energy to the people. That was unbelievable. I'm getting goosebumps, y'all. It was amazing to watch. It was just such a moment. And then if I had to choose another moment, Well, I guess this sort of sums up Eurovision 2021. Sitting next to Angela Perry-Sterry through a plexiglass wall trying to take a selfie, you know, because everything about this is bizarre. She's like putting her lips to plexiglass. I'm on the other side extending a camera in front of a ring light in a room. Just bizarre. Just a bizarre Eurovision, but one that worked. Eurovision brings us together, right? But we were forced to stay apart. And that tension throughout the 2 weeks, that's something I will remember.
Yeah, absolutely. What great words, actually, from William there. Really kind of setting the tone,
yeah,
I think.
Can only imagine.
For what was quite an amazing, I imagine, couple of weeks for him.
Yeah.
I remember he kind of looked drained, didn't he?
He did. And I mean, I can understand that anyway, because it's a big full-on event to cover, but especially during, you know, the pandemic and stuff. And we have to say they did do a very good event, EBU, you know, as well as they could have done, really.
You're listening to Nul Poir, and we're looking back at some of our favourite bits from the from 2021, really, and all the people we've spoken to. One of those was Ian Dale.
He is he's quite well known, I would say, in the UK. He's a professional sort of broadcaster. He has a show on a station, on a national station called LBC. He is much more, I guess, associated with politics, but much like Steve Rosenberg, who we spoke to and we had our best bits from in the previous episode, he's also a big fan of Eurovision.
Yeah, and this is a really odd interview to listen to in a way, because what keeps happening is he keeps on sort of playing us these really obscure Eurovision hits off his phone. So enjoy that as you hear now how just how big of a fan of the Eurovision Song Contest Ian really is.
I suppose I first got into it in the early 1970s. I can remember Cliff Richard doing Power to All Our Friends. And then, of course, ABBA in 1974. And I think it was really that really sparked it. And Olivia Newton-John, Long Live Love. I don't know if you remember that one. And I used to, I mean, I've always been a bit slightly autistic on lists and scoring things. So even when I was like 12 or 13, I would make a list of all the countries and then I would score them for about five or six different categories to work out what I thought ought to be the winner. But I think the mid to late 70s were a real heyday of Eurovision, and there were some fantastic songs, and there's some very, very bad songs as well, it has to be said. I actually went to the contest a couple of times in the 1990s. I went to Dublin in 1994, which is when Riverdance was first performed. And I was actually one of the first people to see it performed. I attended the dress rehearsal.
Wow.
And I can just remember sitting, and I hate dance, but I was sitting there and I was going all tingly. And I thought, this is something really special. At the end of it, the audience just rose as one. I mean, we could not believe what we'd seen. It was far better than any of the songs.
Now, I'd be interested, Ian, to know, as yourself, as a political commentator, what your take is on the whole it's all politics argument as to why the UK doesn't do so well. Do you agree that's a factor, or has that changed a lot?
I think there is obviously political voting in Eurovision. I mean, we know Greece and Cyprus, you know exactly what's going to happen with the 12 points that they dole out. You know that Turkey is very rarely going to give Greece any points. So there is politics at play. With us, I think it is slightly more simple in that I cannot remember the last time that we've entered a good song.
Yes.
And this year was a particularly terrible one. So, I mean, I don't think we should have been surprised this year to get no points at all, because it was a terrible song, an absolute shocker. So I don't think there's a plot because of Brexit to vote Britain down. We didn't get many points before Brexit. So it's an easy thing for people to say, but I think it can be exaggerated.
Do you have a particular Eurovision memory that really stands out? I mean, you've mentioned Dana International, which must be an amazing moment. Anything else that stands out for you as something you'll never forget?
Well, I think going to Dublin in 1994, I remember going to an evening thing in a bar where the Norwegian duo were there, Elisabeth Andreasen. Elisabeth Andreasen had won, I think, a few years before with Let It Swing. So as I'm speaking, I'm trying to find these things on my phone. I just remember being in that bar when they did it a cappella. It got to your emotions. And here we are. I don't know if you... Elisabeth Andreasen and Jan Werner Danielsson. Remember this?
Oh, I think I do vaguely, actually. It sounds very Disney, doesn't it?
Yeah, it would be a good film soundtrack, it has to be said. Anyway, you probably have to pay royalties if I play
Yeah, yeah,
much
yeah, we do. As long as we review it, it's all kosher.
Okay, well, we can review it, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
So,
I think a lot of what you're saying is kind of playing into the hands of something that we were talking about on our last podcast, this idea of Eurovision, not in a political way, but in a kind of human-to-human way, has this unique way of bringing people and bringing the continent of Europe together and unifying and uniting people. And I think those examples there really kind of show that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that, in that often there are different conflicts in Europe, and obviously Russia is seen as a bit of an ogre at the moment, the Hungarian government too. But Eurovision can actually bring people together. I mean, it does get political, obviously, when sort of you get different countries accusing others of this, that, or the other. Or certainly my experience of attending to contests is that it's just a wonderful occasion. If anybody gets a chance to go, I'd highly recommend it. I lived in Germany for a time, and of course, Eurovision is massive in Germany, but Germany had never done anything in Eurovision until the year I lived there, actually, 1983, when Nicole won with Ein bisschen Frieden. And that was just a massive moment for Germany. I think it was almost as if the war had been forgotten at that point, and that they knew that the rest of Europe actually quite liked them, really.
I think it's worth asking in that case, what is your favourite Eurovision song?
One of the ones that I really, it goes back to the 1970s. In fact, let me see if I can definitely find this. I have about 1,400 Eurovision songs on my phone, can you believe?
I think I can actually, I can. Now, Ian. Yeah.
Oh, no, here we go. Oh, Martin, come on, you must know this.
I don't think I do, I'm afraid. It sounds quite Beatles-esque.
This is a disgrace. Call yourself a Eurovision fan. Just because it was probably before you were born. It was from...
Is it Netherlands?
No, yes, it is.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I see a star.
Yes.
I do recognise it more now when we got to the chorus, but I can't say that I know it.
Yeah, it's Mouth and McNeil. And then there was this other one, which is a really kitschy one. This was Luxembourg from Sophie and Magali. I mean, this is such a typical Eurovision song from the 70s, isn't it?
It really is.
Papa Penguin.
It very much feeds into the novelty songs of the 1970s, doesn't it? There was lots of people very big fans of novelty songs in the 70s, and they're really going for that market, I think. Ian, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. I think we've covered everything from politics to cheesy 1970s pop songs. It's been absolutely great. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll have to speak to you again maybe nearer May to get your thoughts on all the entries as they're put forward for 2022.
And we can go through some of my favourites from the 1980s then as well.
Yeah. Hooray!
Or maybe not. All right, thanks very much.
Oh, there he is, Ian Dale. And we do need to get him back on. Maybe let's steer clear of all of his favourite songs from the 80s.
I liked hearing the songs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, so did I. I think that was great. I just think we could go down a rabbit hole from which we may escape. very good. Right, this is our final best bit to bring you now. And I think I think I can speak for both of us in saying it was our highlight. Yeah. Because we actually got to do this one in person.
Yeah, that was great. And we're, of course, talking about the lovely Dali Freyr, the Icelandic Eurovision entry for 2021 and 2020. We were so excited because basically we were going to see him perform in London, but we didn't know if that necessarily meant we would also be able to get an interview with him. But we tried our chances, didn't we? We tried our best to get hold of him because we knew he was going to be there. We knew he was there, so we had to try and speak to him. We had so much to talk to him about because he's featured so heavily in our podcasts this year. So here it is. This is the moment we climbed up lots of stairs to meet him in his dressing room.
Quite a few stairs.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the UK. How's the tour going so far?
Thank you so much. The tour is going very well.
How have fans been reacting?
It's been really interesting because I think we rescheduled this tour twice. Yeah. So the people that bought the tickets bought them a year and a half ago, which is like right after Think About Things. So people probably didn't even check out the other stuff. They just heard Think About Things and bought a ticket.
We are guilty of that. That's exactly what I did.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Knew what to expect. And I think we definitely do something that they didn't expect. But yeah. I feel like people are still liking it.
Glad to hear that. Going back to Eurovision this year, tell us a bit about your Eurovision experience, because it looked like it was a little bit of a roller coaster. There's a lot of things going on. How was it for you?
It was a lot of fun in the beginning. Yeah. Like for the first week, it was super fun when we were like just getting ready to do the thing. And then when we found out that we weren't actually going to be there, it was a week of waiting, basically. Yeah. I watched Eurovision for 5 nights in a row while sitting in a chair with cameras pointed at me. Like, I like Eurovision, but 5 nights in a row, that's a lot of Eurovision.
We've never done that, have we?
No, even we haven't done that, and we really like Eurovision. Is there an element of you that, because you had such a huge success on social media and across the world with Think About Things, is there an element of you that feels a little disappointed that you weren't able to use that song on the Eurovision stage?
No, like the song went way further than I thought it would, and the goal was to have fun with my friends there and further my career, and it did both of those things.
What did you make of the huge reaction to Think About Things?
It was weird, like, because it was in the beginning of COVID, so like just the world was changing at the same time as my life was changing a lot also, so I kept kind of doing the same thing as I had been doing, just on a bigger scale. Like, I had more people listening, but I was still just in my studio and couldn't really go anywhere. Like, I was doing way less concerts than I would have before.
Would you ever think about coming back to Eurovision again? Not anytime soon, but is it ever in your mind? Are you thinking, that's my chapter of life now, I've done that, I'm moving on to, you know, other things?
I'm open to, like, writing something for somebody else, but competing is a lot. Eurovision fans are intense, and if they don't root for your song, they will sometimes root against them. Of course, that's probably not even the majority, it's just the loud minority. So you get a lot of hate just for not being the song that people are.
Really? Like, were you surprised about that?
Not really, but I had done my research. Like, I had watched a lot of Eurovision, I had gone through the forums, like, I studied Eurovision before I did Think About Things, basically.
How has your life changed since?
Now, when we play in front of real people, you can actually feel it and hear it, like, that makes it so much more real. It's been kind of unreal, and you just see names and, like, profile pictures and numbers and stuff like that, but now you're actually seeing real people, so it's first now where I'm, like, actually getting to experience it, kind of.
Now, you might have noticed the UK hasn't done very well in Eurovision recently. Wow. Yeah, I know, big shock. And so Martin and I have kind of thought we may as well throw our hat in the ring and just write a Eurovision song and see if the UK picks it up, maybe. So have you got any tips for, you know, you've written two amazing Eurovision songs. Have you got any tips for us? What makes a good Eurovision song? Where should we start out?
I think there's a few things that you need to, like, be aware of when you write a Eurovision song. Of course, first, it's make a song that's, like, that's true to you. Like, yeah. Don't try to make something that's gonna work in Eurovision if it's totally different from whatever it is that you make. But think about the performance in like, maybe kind of like moments. It has to flow, but you have to have, like, a few memorable moments.
Just on the Eurovision Song Contest at the moment, I don't know whether you heard what Annie Fried from ABBA was saying about Eurovision recently and about how she feels it's not the same as it used to be and it's not as good as it was. What are your feelings on Eurovision right now?
Eurovision is way better now than it was before. There's no question about that. It's just so much bigger. There's so much more effort put into it. That's the weirdest statement to make. I disagree.
Talk to me about the future of Darcy. Where do you go from here?
All of our concerts are sold out, so we have a lot of touring to do still, and I'm going to work on an album, and I'm going to make some more music videos. And
yeah, well, there's new music coming. What can you tell? Can you give me any clues as to what to expect?
Any collabs? Yeah, anyone?
I'm doing some collabs, but nothing that's happening on my project yet, because I have exactly written nothing for the album. I've just been preparing for the tour and having a baby and stuff like that.
Little things.
Yeah, but you can just expect more music and more.
Any idea of when?
Just more.
You know when?
Before the summer, there's going to be a single for sure. During the summer, there's probably going to be another single. I don't know if the album is going to come next year or the year after, but it has to be right. I don't want to just write something to get it out so I can, like, capitalize on some momentum or something. I just want to release the right project.
Just finally, on your fans, we are members of the Dardy International fan group. We're very pleased about that, and we know that this is a growing thing around the world. People love you. What's your message to your fans who have followed you all the way through?
Be nice to yourself, be nice to each other, be nice to everybody else, and have a good.
What wise words from
Yeah,
Darthy.
Very wise from
Have
Darthy,
a good.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, it's very sort of Darthyism, we'll call it.
Yeah, it is very much a Darthyism. Oh, and what a great way to end our look back at some of the best bits from Nolpwa in 2021. And I think just over the last two podcasts, we've really had just such a lovely little journey through some of the things and some of the interviews we brought you. And it's been really, really nice to do that. Thank you for listening to Nolpwa over 2021. We hope you'll continue to listen in 2022.
Please
It'll
do.
Be great to be along with you for the ride in what will be another crazy year of Eurovision.
Yes, it certainly promises to be. And we would love to hear from you. Do get in touch. Have you got any New Year resolutions that are possibly Eurovision related? Is this the year that you're planning to go to see Eurovision? Maybe you've never been before. Maybe we'll see you there. Do let us know what your Eurovision plans for 2022 are. Give us an email, nolpoirpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find us, of course, on Twitter @poirnol or Instagram, nolpoir. Podcast. Do follow us on all those lovely things and the YouTube channel as well, Nolpwa, and let us know what your plans are for this year. We'd love to hear from them. And also your best bits from Nolpwa. If there's any that we've missed out that you really enjoy from the podcast, let us know those as well.
Please do. And thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again on the next edition of
Nolpwa.